Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Tinka, tinka, tinka. Tinka, tinka, tinka. Sound check. Tinka, tinka.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today, you'll meet two remarkable women. Erin McKeown, singer, songwriter, and sports enthusiast, will play for us and tell us who will win the Super Bowl. And you'll hear about the singer and actress Eva Tongue, who... I don't even know how to tell you about Eva Tongue. You know all those stories about rock stars and Hollywood celebrities trashing hotel rooms and engaging in all kinds of bad behavior? Well, turns out they were all following in Eva Tongue's footsteps.
She also allegedly once jabbed a hat pin through a theater curtain at the behind of John Philip Sousa, who had sort of bent over and his buttocks had probably imperceptibly protruded a bit through the old theater curtain. And she couldn't take... She was very tense person, particularly on stage. So yeah, Eva with a hat pin, watch out.
And you know what the best part of that story is? It's not the worst Eva with a hat pin story. We'll hear the unlikely tale of Eva Tongue later in the show. And you can be with us at our next Green Space event. Who knows what kind of mayhem will occur? Details later in the show.
Every day, give me the strength of a thousand beams. Every day, carry me and lift me and hold me. So I am thankful.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Last time, the singer-songwriter Erin McKeown joined us. She told us that her varied musical stylings are a reflection of her personality. She just likes to try new things. So, no surprise then that since we've seen her last, Erin has been trying some other new things. She became a fellow at Harvard University, co-wrote a song with MSNBC host Rachel Maddow, and released a fan-funded new album called Manifestra. We'll talk with her about everything from digital rights management to the upcoming Super Bowl, but for now, let's hear a song. Here's Erin McKeown and her band with The Jailer live on Soundcheck.
Break my back and tie my hands. Send me to the jailer. For every man that jailer keeps, his soul is getting darker. In his secret heart, the jailer knows how lucky he is with prisoners. Though he sleeps on finest sheets, his dream will make him nervous. You can't keep us out. 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 Try to stop the water. Try to stop the fire. Try to stop the culture. Gonna eat the weakest. Nature of a jailer is to to do just what it pleases. But when we hang another man, part of us dies within. Lock your soul up piece by piece. Show me just what love is. Show me just what love is. Show me what is just. You can't keep us out. 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 Try to stop the water. Try to stop the fire. Try to stop a culture.
Erin McKeown with The Jailer. You'll find it on her new album, Manifestra, which is out now. Sounding very much like the band just did it here in the studio, with Mark Dalio on drums and Matt Douglas on sax, Erin singing and playing guitar herself. Good to have you back on Soundcheck.
Hey, John, it's great to be here.
So this is quite the task you've set yourself here with Manifestra. You know, you've always had whatever political views and opinions you have, but to try and sort of marry that to music, that has always been a dicey thing.
It has been so dicey that I have never tried before. And I certainly have been incredibly, like a lot of people, incredibly uncomfortable listening to music that has tried to do that before. It's like, sure, you like the message, but is it a good song?
Right.
You know, and my heroes growing up did it really well. And I just never thought I could.
Like who?
Growing up, I loved Michelle Schacht. I think she does great. I loved Ani DiFranco. I loved the Indigo Girls. Those are women that really influenced me as a teenager, you know, and I just never thought, maybe I didn't have confidence in my own views. And I also just never thought I could do it without sounding stilted or sounding
preachy,
like a hammer instead of a violin, you know?
Right.
And so I think I just kept those things really separate. And honestly, like, the world just demands for me, the world just demanded that I stop. I get over myself and try it, right? And it's like, if I fail at it, okay, I fail at it. But it just felt urgent to me to try.
And the interesting thing is, you know, the sound, for example, the sound of The Jailer, this kind of spare but funky sound, you know, we don't necessarily think of that as the soundtrack to political views. On the other hand, if you think of political music around the world, if you think of, you know, Calypso in the Caribbean or Thomas Mapfumo in what was then Rhodesia becoming Zimbabwean, you know, that this music was like really buoyant
Fela
and energetic.
Fela Kuti has always been a huge influence of mine. And I think, you know, sonically you might have heard that on my other records. But again, it was like I started listening to the words and I started listening to the feelings behind it. And for me, you know, protest music, that we think of it, sometimes we think of it as acoustic guitar and a person standing by themselves, you know, in front of it. And I've never been interested in that music anyway. So so it's never, but you're right.
So this won't be sung around the campfire? Or
if you bring your drum machine and your saxophone to the campfire, then I'll be around that fire with you.
Did it change the songwriting process? Did the words come first?
You know, a lot of the songs on this record came to me in dreams. I know that just sounds like totally like crazy, like I'm really a very functional person. I can pay my bills, but really, that I also in this record was able to tap into maybe a part of myself that is less conscious in terms of being awake, and more conscious maybe in terms of being connected to power greater than myself, a community, a tradition of connecting. So a song like Manifestra, the title track, woke me up. I played a really lovely gig at this ex brothel in Western Massachusetts, and you stay overnight over top of the you play in the parlor with no PA system, and you stay overnight in this bedroom over top of the parlor. And I finished the gig, went to sleep at 1 a.m. and about 6 a.m. I just rolled over and I heard "Humble, like the child of God she wants to be." I just heard that and I was like, oh. You know, if I'd been at home, I might have rolled over and gone back to sleep. If I had been at home, I could have written something illegible on the pad next to my bed. But because it wasn't my house, I got up and I went down to the parlor, and that song just came. It just came like that. And some other songs on the record, lines and bits of them came to me like that, like would wake me up or would be kind of eating at my subconscious in this way. And they came with music. Which is also, for me, has been a new thing. You know, we have a song called "That's Just What Happened" that we'll play later,
right,
where the middle part of it came to me in a dream with all the chords and all the music, and that never happened before.
Wow. Erin McKeown's new record is called Manifestra. It's out now. She's playing at Le Poisson Rouge on Friday, January 18th, and playing at Littlefield in Brooklyn on Saturday, January 19th, playing for us, obviously, with the band here in the Soundcheck studio. So where does the name Manifestra come from?
It came when I woke up and wrote that song. It came in that morning time where I was just sitting there writing what I just started the pen going, and it just is, I think it might be in the third verse of that song, and I didn't stop to think, wait, that's not a word. You know, just it was Manifestra, which to me, you know, obviously feels like a manifesto.
Right.
It feels like
Has a kind of feminine.
There's a feminine ending to it. There's also a word I love, fenestra, the Latin word for window.
For window, yeah.
I love that word. I also love the word orchestra and the word opera, and so those sort of words were all in there, and you know, it just never occurred to me that that word didn't mean anything. So I mean, because it means something now. But
what does it mean now?
Well, I feel like it describes this record for me in that it's this like urgent desire to connect, and to connect by stating who you are and by finding other people who are equally interested and connected in stating who they are, and it's a statement of purpose, right? Mm. Let's do something. Like, let's talk about what we are, and then let's do something. And for me, the record is like internal change. Things changed inside of me, and then I felt completely motivated, urgent, had to change things outside of me.
All right, Erin McKeown, talking the talk. Now let's see how you walked the walk, because while you were also writing these songs, you went to Harvard University's Berkman Center for Internet and Society.
I love hearing people say that. What is it?
It was going to be my very next question to you. What is it? What is that?
It's a room. Well, it's a house. It's a house in Cambridge. And what it was for me, to be a fellow there, was every Tuesday for a year. I went, and there's maybe 20 to 30 other people, and somewhere that number would show up every Tuesday. And these people are lawyers, social scientists, video makers, computer scientists, people who were doing work on intellectual property from all kinds of angles. And we would literally sit at a really big table and talk about what are we working on. And connections arise from those things. So, you know, there's a guy there who was working on recommendation engines, and he was looking at what Google Play would recommend to you if you bought one app, and then what's the next one. So we ended up starting a conversation about how recommendation engines work for music, right? Mm-hmm. And so I get to have a conversation with him about how I can't stand the records that Amazon pairs me with, you know? And then we get to talk about that. So
I'm going to have to look you up on Amazon now to see what those records are.
They've been good lately. I looked at them yesterday. They've been better lately. But, you know, that's a trivial example, but that's an example of the type of connections like that. So there's a videographer there who was doing work on the way women in the third world are using video technology and the internet. And a lot of work I do is about media access and looking at what happens when some people can easily use the internet and some people cannot.
Mm-hmm.
So those type of connections.
That's the great divide in our society.
Absolutely, it's the great divide. And, you know, more and more government services are moving online, more and more communication and stuff like that is moving online. And if you're not part of that, you're not part of it. And, you know, there's all kinds of levels to that conversation. But, you know, for me in Western Massachusetts, I was the last person on my road for a long time who could have DSL. If you went one house down, you had to get cable or satellite or something like that. You know, if you were even lucky, you might be on dial-up down the road. So that kind of stuff is really, really important. And it was that. That was what I was digging into there and meeting people. And it was an experience that I think it's going to it's going to be years before I probably have fully used everything that I might have learned there or started.
All right. So that's a long-term process,
too. Is that walk the walk? Is that enough walk?
That's a lot. It sounds like a lot of action, and a lot of it's still to come, it sounds like.
I hope so.
Erin McKeown is with us on Soundcheck here in the studio with Mark Dalio on drums and Matt Douglas on sax. Let's put them back to work, shall we? Erin moving from the guitar to our piano for this next number. It's called That's Just What Happened. From the album Manifestra, but here's another live performance, Erin McKeown and her band on Soundcheck.
Thank you.
lasso was tied, and whiskey had a hold of my head. For every song that that liquor would write, that was one sip closer to death. Desire, I knocked on that wooden sign that promised to make truth in my dreams. But I couldn't get enough of that delicate stuff to get the flames off the back of. So beware, my children, of that devious ride. The toll it takes will never be met. For every song that that liquor would write, that was one sip closer to death.
That is Erin McKeown and a song called That's Just What Happened. You'll find it on her album Manifestra, her latest, but that's a live performance with Erin switching between our piano and her guitar and Mark Dalio playing the drums, Matt Douglas on sax. Erin, I feel like I just sat through a movie, a kind of a, you know, film noir thing shot in blacks and grays, except for a scene in the middle where somebody walks into the local Salvation Army and gets redeemed or whatever.
You know, I guess somebody could have told me not to do that, but with this record, there was no one around to tell me, you know? I made this record on my own, you know, without management, without... you know, a lot of support staff. It was just me and the musicians and a computer.
And Rachel Maddow.
And that's just what happened. Yeah.
So you ended up co-writing the song Baghdad to the Bayou via text message with MSNBC host Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, and it sounds like a stunt or something. Like, can you do this? Can you walk on this wire? But it's really it was the only way it could happen. I ran into Ira Glass in Anchorage, Alaska, with Tao of the Get Down, Stay Down, and Ira was organizing a benefit at Town Hall a couple summers ago to aid in the recovery from the Deepwater Horizon spill, and he had Rachel Maddow already booked on it, and he also had Lucy Wainwright Roach on there, another old friend of mine, and Ira and Lucy decided to write a song for the benefit, and Ira said, would you see if Rachel would write a song with you? And I was like, well, I'll ask, you know. And I asked, and she said, yeah, absolutely. And the only way we could do it was by text. She was between Louisiana and Iraq in the month leading up to that, and email was hard for her, phone was impossible, and text was what it was.
Well, it's a neat song, and in the liner notes of the record, Manifestra, You mentioned this LaBelle song, Who is Watching the Watcher. Which of you inserted that reference?
That is me. That is, you know, we began this interview talking about like putting politics in music and the dangers of it. That to me is the best political song I've ever heard.
Who's watching the watcher?
Up next, more with Erin McKeown, and later, a look at the Queen of Vaudeville, Eva Tongue. And we want you to join us in person at a taping of Soundcheck on January 31st. I'll be joined by the bad boy chef, Eddie Wong. His new memoir is called Fresh Off the Boat, a chronicle of his life as the son of Taiwanese immigrants. And Eddie's bringing along one of his favorite artists, the rapper Heems of the late great New York hip-hop duo, Das Racist.
Tecate at the party to start me promptly. Loud pack over Godfrey, got the bomb weight. Sipping on some Ova, blowing on some Marley. Cowabunga gnarly, brown Chris Farley. My girl look like Jackie O, more classy though. Me, I look like young Placido. Domingo, tally ho. I beat it like Ringo. My phone, it rings though, and I'm like bingo. That's when I hit him with Dominican Juno. Like baby Juno, my favorite writer's Juno Diaz. He my smartest 3 SAT tests. Though depressed, he best.
A conversation with Eddie Wong and a performance by Heems on January 31st at 2 p.m. live in the Green Space. For tickets, go to wnyc.org/thegreenspace.
All the departed dear loved ones of mine, stick them up front in an offensive line. Oh, drop kick me, Jesus, to the goalposts of life, end over end, neither left nor right.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Singer-songwriter Erin McKeown, still with me here in the studio. Her latest album is called Manifestra. But the song that you're hearing in the background isn't from that record. Erin, that's you singing Dropkick Me Jesus through the goalposts of life, a Bobby Bear tune. What occasioned this?
Well, you know, I live in this cabin in western Massachusetts, right on a river. It's super picturesque, really in the middle of nowhere. And I did this, started this web series years ago called Cabin Fever, where I would do these live webcasts from my house and have friends over and bring in people, you know, through the internet and things like that. And it's basically, I would describe it as it's like Wayne's World meets the Judy Garland show. Like I try to bring a vaudeville aesthetic to this, like, you know, hyper modern thing. Mm-hmm. And so a few years ago I did one on Super Bowl Sunday, and I'm a huge sports fan, and I wanted to do songs about sports. And so I asked on Facebook and Twitter, like, what are the best songs about sports? And people sent in the songs, and I learned them and added a few in of my own, and had some guests with their Super Bowl predictions come in, and and some guests wrote songs, and we did a whole hour of music and sports.
So you live in western Massachusetts, which might actually be as close to New York as it is to Boston, but are you a New England fan? Are you a New England Patriot fan?
Nope.
Good for you.
Excuse me, is there a button to push while I throw up? No, I grew up in Virginia, and I'm a Redskins fan.
Oh, okay. Well, they're not in the running for this year's Super Bowl anymore, nope. But... they had a good run.
They had a great run this year. It's really upsetting, the last game.
Yeah,
really upsetting watching
Robert Griffin
RG3. I think that the Redskins ownership, I'm going to go out on a limb here, I think they're greedy. I think they made a short-sighted decision.
To play a guy on a hurt knee.
Play a guy on a hurt knee. And I hope that he recovers, but this is his second surgery on that knee, second reconstruction.
Yeah.
And he's not Superman.
Have you ever considered, I mean, obviously you are a sports fan. Have you ever considered doing a whole album of sports-themed songs?
You know, I'd love to. I mean, there's a really great tradition. There's so many great baseball songs. Football songs are harder to find, though we found, you know.
The Bobby Bear.
The Bobby Bear song and Backfield in Motion by Mel and Tim. You need to hear this song. It's exactly what you think it is.
So maybe we will hear some.
Yeah.
So it was originally by Mel and Tim.
Yeah.
But this is from your the Cabin Fever.
From
is
Cabin
that the
Fever,
name of the
yeah.
the webcast from my guest Erin McKeown? The song is called Backfield in Motion.
Backfield in motion, baby, I'm gonna have to penalize you. Ooh, backfield in motion, yes, you know that's against the rules. Offside and holding. Baby, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Ooh, offside and holding, yes, holding on to someone else. You know you cheated, faking the bout. You know you're balking, baby. Strike three, you're out, 'cause I caught you with your backfield in motion.
Backfield in Motion is the name of that song, originally from Mel and Tim, but sung with aplomb by my guest Erin McKeown. You know, there was a poster called Backfield in Motion that was on many a dorm, a guy's dorm wall back
offsides
in the day.
Offsides and Holden.
So you're a big sports fan. Did you grow up playing sports?
Yeah, I did. I grew up on the swim team, playing tennis, and then organized sports. I played field hockey.
Great game.
It was a great game. It was a fast game. It was a rough game, and I liked it quite a lot. I was a link, which I don't know what the equivalent is in soccer, but you're basically like the second offensive line.
Okay.
And
so,
you basically chase people, and you sort of hang back while the forwards kind of scrum, and then you just score from the top of the circle.
So we've established that your football team is the Washington Redskins. Who's your baseball team?
This is such a hard question right now. I'm just going to be totally honest. I do like the Red Sox, but it's so hard right now.
Get out of my studio.
Oh, no. Seriously?
I grew up in New York.
Okay.
Actually, I grew up in a family of Mets fans. So how I became a Yankee fan is...
You know, the rivalry is really fun. It's never It's never crossed the line to me. Yeah. But when I have been in Philly and on stage and said something about sports, you know, I was teasing the Phillies fans a little bit one time on a gig, and that was a bad idea. I grew up in Virginia. The Orioles were my team growing up. So my guy growing up was Brady Anderson,
hit 50 like home
the
runs
greatest
one year.
Season ever by a leadoff hitter, but just one season.
Right.
It was his eye exercises that
pretty
did
pretty suspicious.
That's what I heard. But I also grew up loving Cal Ripken, and one of the coolest things I have is my high school field hockey stick is signed by Cal Ripken.
Wow.
Yeah. That was when you could bring an object like that into a baseball stadium.
We're speaking with Erin McKeown. Her latest album is called Manifestra. If you weren't so busy singing and writing songs, if you had the chance, if you were a baseball player, what would your walk-up song be? You know how they all have the songs now?
It would just be something ridiculous like that new Pitbull song about, like, don't stop the party or something. That's probably what it'd be. Or I would go the total opposite direction and be like, I have, like, a Leonard Cohen song or something while I walk to the plate.
Here I stand. I'm your man. If you want a boxer, I will step into the ring for you.
Erin McKeown, talking sports with us on Soundcheck today, because after all, you can't talk politics all the time. Manifestra, the album of a serious political bent, although having said serious, it's also got a lot of humor and a lot of fun stuff on it. But speaking of fun stuff, Super Bowl 47, it's down to four teams. New Orleans, February 3rd. Who do you like?
I am going to go San Francisco, Baltimore, and I'm going to go Baltimore.
Really?
I think that emotional manipulation that is Ray Lewis is going to pull his team. I love Ray Lewis. I love the Ravens. I think they're underrated. I think it's a great story. I also love Colin Kaepernick. I love him because
he's the 49ers quarterback.
Tattoos, sleeve tattoos, and he's gotten a lot of guff for it, and I think he's handled it really well. I think that's the most ridiculous conversation ever of whether a quarterback can have sleeve tattoos.
But all the linemen can have them, and the linebackers.
Right. That's right. It's a completely it's a complicated discussion, and I can't believe that people are spending time on that in that way. Like, so I'd like to see that.
All
That's
right.
What I'd like to see.
So, Erin is picking the 49ers to beat the Falcons and the Ravens to upset the Patriots to get into the Super Bowl and further to upset what would be a very heavily favored 49ers team.
That's right.
And so what will you be doing on Super Bowl Sunday? Will you be back in the cabin with the web and the songs?
No, I will be in Brighton, UK. I have a gig that night in Brighton. And hopefully we'll be done in time for sure before kickoff. And maybe I'll just grab like a bunch of English people who care about football and we'll go watch the game.
If you grab a bunch of people in England who care about football, they will take you to a Brighton and Hove match.
That's right.
Probably against, you know, Coventry City or somebody
right.
like that.
American football, I should say. I do have right. tickets to see Arsenal while I'm over there.
No way.
Yes,
oh,
yes.
I'm insanely jealous.
Yeah,
that is my team.
No, the guy that runs my label over there has Arsenal tickets and I've never been to a football match.
All right, now you really do need to get out of my studio.
Okay.
Erin McKeown, thank you so much for spending some time with us on
Soundcheck.
Pleasure,
John. Thank you.
This is Soundcheck.
Forget your troubles and just get happy. You gotta chase all your cares away. Sing hallelujah, come on, get happy. Get ready for the judgment day. Sun is shining, come on, get happy. The Lord is waiting to take your hand. Hallelujah, come on, get happy. We're going to the promised land. A river, wash your sins away in the tide. It's all so peaceful on the other side. You got your troubles, just be happy. You've got to chase all your cares away. Sing hallelujah, come on, be happy. Get ready for the judgment day.
Coming up, the story of the controversial queen of vaudeville, Eva Tangue. This is Soundcheck.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. 100 years ago, the vaudeville singer Eva Tanguay was one of the biggest celebrities of her time. The first rock star, if you will. In fact, Eva Tanguay was the first to do a lot of things. Well, at least to do them in public, and some of them were pretty scandalous. Despite that, though, not much has been known about her life until now. Joining me is the writer Andrew Erdman. His new book is called Queen of Vaudeville, The Story of Eva Tanguay. Andy, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks so much.
So what sort of drew you into telling this story that seems to have fallen off the table for so many years?
Yeah, well, sort of like you said it, you know, I came across her when I was doing research on my doctoral dissertation years ago, and I was struck with how modern she was and how forgotten she was. So it was that combination of I'm going to tell her story, and how could we have forgotten about her and the resonances of so much that was familiar to me?
Well, now, one of the reasons that we could have forgotten about her is that much of her career is not recorded.
Correct. She was very much a sort of transitional figure between the 19th century and really our modern 20th century entertainment, you know, stardom phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. But there is one exception, right?
Yeah, there's a recording of her singing her big signature song, I Don't Care. And I Don't Care was her total, you know, famous number. And it was recorded in 1922, which is late in her career. The recording quality isn't great, but she never recorded a lot of numbers the way, say, Sophie Tucker, who was her contemporary, laid down a lot of tracks.
Well, this is what we have. You can hear the voice of Eva Tanguay. Well, that is a 1922 recording, but even so, Andy, the quality is pretty bad on this.
Yeah, it is.
That is Eva Tanguay's big hit, I Don't Care. She came to be known as the I Don't Care Girl. Now, since that song is so important in telling the story, and since it's really kind of hard to hear the words in that 1922 recording, we've enlisted the help of musicians Bree Benton and Franklin Bruno, who were last here performing the songs of Poor Baby Bree. They're here to bring Eva Tanguay back to life with a live performance of I Don't Care.
In 1904, I got a big break in a Broadway musical called The Sambo Girl. It wasn't exactly art, but I got this song to sing, I Don't Care. Audiences went nuts over it. It became my signature song. Sang it for the rest of my career. It was written into my contracts. I became the I Don't Care Girl. But, you know, I think it might have given folks the wrong feeling of me, because, you see, I do care. Too much sometimes. But when you're the I Don't Care Girl, well, people don't see that so much. Hello, everybody. My voice is what you call a freak, but I don't mind it. Some lines I sing, some lines I don't sing. I don't care. A teacher's rate I could afford if I had studied hard abroad. That's a pretty note. Broad. I'd now be working for my board, and that's why I don't care. I don't care. I don't care if I'm not doing the song. And while I am shouting, you may all be doubting and hoping it won't last long. But I don't care. It's slippery up here. My voice may sound funny, but it's getting me some money. So I don't care. Goodbye, everybody.
That is Bree Benton and Franklin Bruno at our piano, bringing to life the song that was such a big hit in the early part of the 20th century for Eva Tungway, who is the topic of Andrew Erdman's new book, Queen of Vaudeville, The Story of Eva Tungway. So the song, she sort of comes into the possession of this song in 1904, records it in 1922, as we heard a little bit of earlier. Does it become like something she can't escape from at that point?
Absolutely. You know, it was kind of an albatross around her neck. I sometimes think of, you know, rock bands that had like one huge hit, and 20 years later, you know, trying to put their kids through college, they are forced to, you know, play it at theme parks. You know, Eva also, she was a complicated character. She was a person with big mood swings and ups and downs and a lot of demons. So it was true, in a sense, that for her to always have to put on this happy, I don't care face was difficult. At the same time, she was a real master publicist, so she got a lot of mileage out of saying, you know, she told so many journalists, you know, I really do care. She even came up, she even wrote a song called I Really Do Care After All, you know, which was a sort of countermeasure to her own success. So she played it well, but there was also some truth to it.
But she had this larger-than-life persona, this
Absolutely.
Shock of unmanageable red hair, mm-hmm. and this crazy voice, which may not have been quite as crazy as she led people to believe.
Right.
But the stories, Eva Tungway with a hairpin was a scary sight.
Yeah, it was. She was known for wielding it at moments of you know, great peril. At one point, she was touring and she was in Kentucky, and there was a guy who she had enlisted to sort of help her out, be her stagehand. And a bunch of local toughs had cornered him behind the theater after the show. And Eva grabbed a hatpin, one of these big, long hatpins, and started jabbing left and right, and was later arrested for assault with intent to kill, you know, which did not, you know, was not the case. But mm-hmm. She also allegedly once jabbed a hatpin through a theater curtain at the behind of John Philip Sousa, who had sort of bent over, and his buttocks had probably imperceptibly protruded a bit through the old theater curtain, and she couldn't take. She was very tense person, particularly uh-huh. on stage. So yeah, Eva with a hat pin, watch out.
And you know, the various. She was married twice.
She
right?
was married twice. Yeah, never happily or that long, but yeah.
Uh huh. But there were many other men.
Yeah, she her niece once said that she had a new uncle every summer, because, you know, Eva was sort of hooked. Eva liked men as, you know, sexual, you know, partners and men to squire about town, but not as long-term partners. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of ambivalence towards men.
Well, and she was also someone who had her head on straight when it came to business. She had contracts. She was sort of, knew how to, for a while at least, look after herself, it seems.
Yeah, for a while, exactly. Early on, she was quite aware that she was not being paid what she was worth when she looked at the array of other performers in early vaudeville. And she basically said to E.F. Albee, who was one of the big moguls of vaudeville, look, pay me what I'm worth or I'm not coming back. And he did. Eventually, she wasn't so good at... She was good at acquiring money. She wasn't great at holding on to mm-hmm. it. And then the Depression came, and that was way past when her career was really at its peak. And so she died with relatively little money. But for a while, you're quite right. She was a shrewd negotiator.
Right.
And a tough negotiator.
In a business exclusively dominated and controlled by men, she found a way to kind of make her way in this world. And, you know, if she was squiring a new gentleman around town, you know, this would not be something she'd be shy about. She'd be, you know, she liked the scandal. She liked the lurid headlines, even.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. The scandals didn't seem to hurt Eva's public image. Arguably, they even helped her public image. You know, she had a very scandalous affair with a guy named C.F. Zittel, who was a well-known entertainment journalist. And he was married, and the two of them hooked up and went out to a hotel in Brighton Beach and basically stayed there for a week. And then Mrs. Zittel had her brother dress up as a bellhop and bust in the door and found the two of them. I think the reporter said they found Ms. Tungway wearing even less than she does on stage. And but it didn't hurt her image. Mm-hmm. So she was pretty brazen about it. She did allegedly have an affair with George Walker, who was a famous African-American comedian. He died quite young, tragically.
Mm-hmm. That one she was kind of coy about.
She was. I still think interracial relationships at that time were quite, you know, you were playing with fire there, but to Eva it seems not to have, you know, not to have mattered.
So it was all about Eva, to the point that even a lot of her repertoire became songs about Eva.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's kind of like the, I think of those, some of those bands like Big Country, that their big song was In a Big Country.
Right,
or,
right.
Know. So, yeah.
Or even Lady Gaga with Bad
exactly.
Romance, where, you know, Gaga, la la la, you know, she's
exactly.
weaving her own, and rappers do this all the time, weave their own names into their songs.
Totally, and is it James Brown or Little Richard who has, Bo Diddley.
Oh,
who has
sure.
a song, Bo Diddley.
Bo Diddley, yeah.
So she really, you know, early on set the template for that by realizing that, look, people are here basically to see me, not to witness some kind of virtuosic skill at singing, as you could probably sense from the recording. And so she thought, well, might as well sing about me and write songs about me. And so there are lots of Eva Tangway rag. Eva Tangway stands for this, stands for that. So,
and yeah. there's Eva Tangway's love song, mm-hmm. which we're going to hear. Once again, Andrew Erdman's new book is Queen of Vaudeville, The Story of Eva Tangway. And once again, enlisting the help of musicians Bree Benton and Franklin Bruno to do Eva Tangway's love song live.
Only mistake I ever made twice was getting married. My first husband was a clog dancer from Kentucky. He was a money-leeching drunk. About 10 years after that divorce, I did something even dumber. I married my pianist, half my age, for the publicity. You see, my star was starting to fade. I thought it would help. It didn't. Marriage and men never helped me a stitch. But you don't want to hear all this from Eva Tangway. How about a song just for you boys? You've heard me sing Billy, Mamie, Hooley, and Dooley. You thought them fine. But this is a star song, not a Stein or a bar song. It's not a shine. What the boys like the most is a song or a toast full of love, love, love. So be of good cheer and join me right here, for I'm your host. I love, but only one, and that is you. There's no one in this world for me.
Eva Tangway's love song. There were many songs about Eva Tangway that Eva Tangway sang. She was the queen of vaudeville, as author Andrew Erdman tells us in his book of that title, and he's with us on Soundcheck. And you heard Bree Benton and Franklin Bruno at the piano doing another of Eva Tangway's songs. So she was the queen of vaudeville. She's all over the headlines, the tabloids. She's got her own paparazzi and all of this. She's making money. What happens? Why do we not know this name? How is it that the echoes of her influence, if felt, are not evident to us?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a number of factors coming together, as far as I can tell. One is she's so present and charismatic in person that, in a way, she just doesn't work in the mediums of recorded technologies. And think about it. Film at the time is silent film. You know, here's a person who can't really act. You know, some days she looks good, some days she doesn't. She doesn't really lend herself to the miming of silent film. The recording technologies, you know, as we noticed, are not, you know, not that great. And so when vaudeville goes under, which is, you know, during World War I, towards after World War I, when movies really rise, she can't really sustain it. She tried to get a Hollywood contract. They didn't bite. She made one movie. It really lost the essence of Eva Tangway. And so she so defined vaudeville, this very present live form, that when it goes down, she goes down.
Mm.
And there are not a lot of artifacts left to capture her.
Do you write about the various dresses, the dress made of pennies, the chandelier dress. I mean, they are exactly what they sound like. Do these things survive?
You know, it's funny. A trunk full of her possessions was found in Southern California in about 2004, 2005. I'd been tracking it for a long time, and then finally it showed up. Some of her costumes were in it, but they were damaged by water. And in the 30s, Eva had a dress shop in Hollywood where she sold some of her costumes, but that went out of business. So not much survives, mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
So, you know, she sounds like such a colorful, irreverent character. But as you say, she was also a complicated person.
Absolutely.
If there is an echo of Eva Tangue's music that we still hear, every Mother's Day, kids, you know, maybe not so much these days, but well into the late 20th century, would sing this song, M-O-T-H-E-R,
mm-hmm.
which she didn't write, but I guess was associated with her, right?
Yeah, Eva was very close to her mother Adele, otherwise known as Marie, who was actually American-born but French-Canadian. And Eva had a very complicated relationship with her father, who probably was an alcoholic and probably not present.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother was central to her. And she was also a sentimental mama's gal.
So this song, there's nothing ironic about this. She meant it when she sang it.
Oh, very much. Very much.
Let's hear another performance from Bree Benton and Franklin Bruno. And this is another big hit for Eva Tangue from the year 1915 called Mother.
M is for the million things she gave me. O means only that she's growing old. T is for the tears were shed to save me. H is for her heart of purest gold. With love light shining. R means right, and right she'll always be. Put them all together, they spell mother. A word that means the world to.
Once again, Bree Benton channeling her inner Eva Tangue with Franklin Bruno at our piano. Mother, big hit for Eva Tangue in 1915. Vaudeville still hanging around. It's World War I. We're not in it yet, so it's still kind of ascendant at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. This is also it's a transitional period because it's when the big, I think Birth of a Nation is 1915, so... Mm-hmm. Big multi-reel feature films are starting to ascend as well, which are one of the death knells of vaudeville. But yeah, vaudeville's still very big.
So is there something cautionary? Is there a cautionary element to the tale of Eva Tangue to, you know, people who are obsessed with celebrity now at the beginning of the 21st century? I mean, you know, are we wrong to think that something like this could happen to a Madonna or a Lady Gaga, that 100 years from now people will be saying, so who were these people?
Well, it's certainly apparent to me that there is an almost arbitrary nature when one looks at the historical celebrity record to who gets remembered and who gets forgotten. And it has to do with a lot of different things, you know. In a sense, no one's written Eva Tangue's biography, not because she wasn't famous, but because it was just hard to do. There wasn't like some archive of Eva stuff in one place. So it is somewhat arbitrary. I guess it is cautionary, John. Yeah.
Well, the book is called Queen of Vaudeville, The Story of Eva Tangue, and it is remarkable for just how modern this woman 100 or more years ago was. Andrew Erdman is the author, and I have to say that Mother song, I'm probably not the only person who first heard it when the late comedian Madeline Kahn sang a version of it on Saturday Night Live a long time ago. We're going to wrap with that. And Andy, great to have you with us on Soundcheck. Bree Benton, Franklin Bruno, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks so much, John.
M is for the many things she gave me. O is for the other things she gave me.
she gave me. Put them all together, they spell mother. The one who means the world to me.
That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. On Monday, as the nation celebrates the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, we'll look at the civil rights legacy of the singer Nina Simone, plus the psychedelic gospel of The Relatives, the group formed in Dallas more than 40 years ago, but they're just putting out their first full-length album. Join us to hear their great session in the green space, or you can watch it right now. We've posted the video of their performance on soundcheck.org. That's Monday night at 9. See you back here then. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC and New York Public Radio. Our production team includes
Katie Bishop,
Mike Katziff,
Greta Cohn,
Paul Schneider,
Irene Trudell,
Bill O'Neill,
George Wellington.
I'm Jason Isaac, and I can say my own name.
Our executive producer is
Joel Meyer.
I'm John Schaefer. You're welcome. Tune in again weeknights at 9 for another Soundcheck.